This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Nathaniel Philbrick, who tells a whale of a tale but travels with George in search of Washington and his legacy. This is the first term of two terms for George Washington, and he travels to meet people. He travels to meet common people and to demonstrate the power of the presidency and also to learn the nation that he now rules in some fashion. In some fashion, it wasn't clear how it's to be done. But there's a trip that he takes to Long Island, and he goes to Long Island, places we all know, Cold Spring Harbor, Roslyn. These are stops along the Long Island Railway, but this is an important serendipitous trip for George Washington, because in a place called Setauket on Long Island Sound were men who participated as spies in the Revolution, and they were not revealed at the time. Why not, Nat?
Well, they weren't revealed as spies. You know, not even their family members knew, because if this experiment in a republic should fail and Great Britain should come back in charge of her former colonies, it would not be a good thing to be known as a spy against the British crown. And so their role as spies was kept an absolute secret. Only Washington and Benjamin Talmadge, his spy chief, were probably the only people who knew their identities. And it wouldn't be until the 20th century that a historian would reveal those identities for the first time. Their family net members would have no idea of the role they took in trying to win America its independence. And so Washington seems to have decided in April of 1790 to head on a four-day trip to Western Long Island. There's absolutely no mention of this trip in the newspapers. I mean, it's a press blackout. It's unimaginable. Why? Because all the other trips are trumpeted in the press. The evidence seems clear, judging on where he goes. He is quietly as possible going to the residences of participants in what was known as the Culper Spy Ring and thanking them, whether it's with just a nod of the head, perhaps with some money, we don't know. But it is one of the more interesting, and as you said, it's serendipitous. It doesn't fit the pattern of the other trips. And yet it speaks so directly to this country's past as being birthed in a revolution, and to the sense of gratitude Washington had to these, unknown group of people who had risked everything for the cause of America.
We don't know if he said anything to Austin Rowe. We don't know if he spoke to Townsend. We don't know if they met at all. Is that correct, Nat?
Right. Well, there is a tradition in Setauket that when Austin Rowe, who was the owner of the tavern where Washington stayed and who was a primary person in getting the messages from the Townsend, who was posing as a loyalist in New York, all the way to Setauket and ultimately across the Sound to Fairfield, Connecticut, and then to Washington on the Hudson. There is a tradition that when Washington arrived in Setauket, Rowe was so excited he fell off his horse, broke his leg. But that's really the only only statement, and it's tradition. It's not that we have. It's mysterious, and as it should be when it comes to espionage. This was one of those quiet chapters in his presidency that goes essentially unnoticed by historians.
You tell wonderful anecdotes. I have to seize on two of them. First of all, there's a chair. Is it in Cold Spring Harbor that Washington sat in? And later on, there was this other fellow from Oyster Bay. Where was that chair?
Well, that chair, was right, if not in Oyster Bay, right in that area, and actually the Huntington Historical Society. And it's a chair that's, right there in the Historical Society where Washington presided over a feast in his name. And many years later, Teddy Roosevelt, whose home in Sagamore was across the water in Oyster Bay, would be asked to sit in that same chair. And so this is quite a chair that you can see in Huntington, New York, if you're in that vicinity.
It reminds me of a story we missed on the way through Boston. In Newburyport, I believe, Washington met with a young fellow named J.Q. Adams. So he's meeting future presidents. Of course, Monroe is critical. Madison's critical. And he's the great uncle of how many presidents? I lost count eventually now.
I mean, I don't know if I can come up with the number myself, but it's, yeah, through Madison. I mean, he's, you know, John Quincy Adams' father, John Adams, Washington had asked Adams if he wanted to take the New England tour with him. Adams said no, he didn't want to, probably to his detriment. That's maybe one of the reasons why being vice president is not exactly the greatest place to be in politics. But it's amazing. He's hobnobbing with he's the first president creating the template that all future presidents will be working from.
A detail here, Matt, just before we turn to Newport at this point. Washington, in taking these trips, does he write in his diary when he gets back? Is that when we learn details of his life? We just have 30 seconds here.
Yeah, you know, he kept a diary, which is full of more like itinerary statements than anything else. But, you know, so that is, it's very helpful. But there's also newspaper accounts, except, of course, with Long Island. But
Long Island. So we don't have him writing down Caleb Brewster. We don't, Austin Rowe. We don't have that in his handwriting.
No, we have none of that. It's just connecting the dots.
It makes the spy ring even better, Nat, that we don't have the evidence. Nathaniel Philbrick.
Yeah.
Nathaniel Philbrick is the author of Travels with George in Search of Washington and His Legacy. And we're headed to Rhode Island, one of the last states to vouchsafe the United States of America, and a mystery to explore about the success of Rhode Island. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.